It's 6:59. You're listening to WHYY FM Philadelphia, your member-supported news and information station, serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. I'm Jennifer Lynn. Good morning. I'm in for Brenda Jurette today. Our engineer is Scott Williams. The Franklin Institute forecast says we could get a shower or thunderstorm today. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 84 degrees. Tonight, a low of 68 with also some possible thunderstorms. 71 degrees in Philadelphia right now as we check shadow traffic. Here's John.
In Conshohocken and Fayette Street blocked off.
Hundreds race to find shelter following a fire at a luxury apartment complex in Conshohocken yesterday. It's Thursday, August 14th. This is WHYY's Morning Edition. Red Cross officials say yesterday's fire at Riverwalk at Millennium Luxury Apartment Development has left 375 people racing to arrange for housing. The fire leveled the $52 million complex. There were no major injuries reported. 5 months after an advisory commission suggested a series of changes to tighten up financial operations at the Pennsylvania State House, many of those recommendations have not been implemented, and Philadelphia will soon release a report on minority participation in city business. In sports, Phil's lost. Eagles are on tonight in preseason. It's 7:01. This is WHYY, 91 FM. 71 degrees on Independence Mall in Philadelphia. It's 6:04. I'm Jennifer Lynn with WHYY News. Hundreds of people are displaced from their homes because of a huge fire in Conshohocken that broke out late yesterday afternoon around rush hour. The fire affected the evening commute both by road and by regional rail. The blaze broke out at a building still under construction at the Riverwalk at Millennium Development in Conshohocken. That building was destroyed and other nearby buildings were also damaged. Montgomery County Public Safety Director Tom Sullivan says the fire broke out between railroad tracks and a waterway, making it hard to get to. He says firefighters cut down fences to gain access. There were no major injuries. Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Bob Casey will be a keynote speaker at the upcoming Democratic National Convention in Denver. The early supporter of Senator Barack Obama is a longtime pro-life advocate, while the Democratic Party has taken a hard pro-choice position. Casey's late father, former Governor Robert Casey, also held a pro-life position. Bob Sr. was denied a key speaking slot at the 92 convention that nominated Bill Clinton. St. Joseph's history professor Randall Miller says the decision to include Bob Jr. this year signals a shift in the Democratic Party.
This is literally what happened in 1992.
Senator Casey says he's honored to be chosen to speak at the convention. A handful of Philadelphians will make political history this month. Democratic Party organizers videotaped their questions for their presumptive presidential nominee yesterday in written House Square. Organizers say elected officials and national policy experts will answer some of the questions at the Democratic National Convention. While some folks jump at the opportunity to tape questions, WHYY's Elizabeth Fiedler found that other residents are less politically engaged.
Bike messenger Tommy Lipka is sitting near the edge of the park. WHYY News.
Thousands of Philadelphia public school students have one less thing to worry about as the first day of classes draws near. School officials say they have reached an agreement with SEPTA that will prevent any cuts to the district's free TransPass program. WHYY's Bill Hangley has more.
Earlier this summer, news.
Unemployment rates in July climbed to a four-year high, and many families in the Philadelphia region are affected by job loss. The stress of unemployment can have a major impact on people's mental health. The New Jersey Association of Mental Health Agencies reports an increased demand for services. Executive Director Dr. Deborah Wenz.
From 5 weeks to some as long as 5 months.
Coming up at 6:33 this morning, we're going to hear a report on the impact of job loss on mental health by WHYY reporter Mike and Scott. 6:09, to the roads we go. Here's shadow traffic.
For WHYY 91 FM, I'm John Butterworth.
Thank you, John. And sports, Phil's lost to the Dodgers, and the two teams are matched up again tonight. The Eagles have a preseason game at home with the Panthers this evening, and the forecast goes like this. Clouds with sun, maybe a shower or thunderstorm today, and a high of 84 degrees. It's muggy and 71 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:10.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News.
Hello, Senator.
Hi, this is Hillary Clinton.
Hi, Senator. I'm just going to go right into the questions because we're getting short on time.
Sure.
Here we go. Today is the Mississippi primary, and polls show Senator Obama taking that state, but you haven't given up there, have you?
Well, I know that it's an uphill climb. You know, obviously, the demographics of Mississippi are ones that I respect, and yet we've worked, you know, to reach out to voters there. I don't give up on any voters, and I know that, you know, there are voters, particularly in the African American community, who are very excited about voting for Senator Obama, and I respect that, and I hope that, you know, if I'm fortunate enough to get the nomination, we'll be working together again. But in the meantime, I will be reaching out and letting voters know that, you know, I'm going to work hard for them regardless.
Senator Obama has responded to your comments about him being the vice president on a ticket that would have you as president. He sounds a bit confused, saying, how could you be hinting at that, considering you don't have as many delegates as he does right now? What are your thoughts on his response?
Well, I think that this has been, you know, kind of blown out of proportion. Obviously, a lot of people who are in the Democratic Party like us both, and that's a good problem to have. But neither of us is in the position to offer anything to anyone. We're still contesting for the nomination, and you know, once we get a nominee, then we can talk about the next phase.
Okay. Well, Pennsylvania, of course, is a very diverse state, as you know. What messages are you starting out with this week as you stump around the state?
Well, that I have the strength and experience to, you know, make the tough decisions that the next president's going to face. The next president will inherit a wealth of problems, unfortunately, and it's going to take an enormous amount of effort to untangle the mess that we're going to inherit from President Bush. And I've been, you know, privileged to have a, you know, broad range of experience that I think puts me in a position to be able to start immediately to tackle, you know, the important issue of ending the war in Iraq and trying to win the war in Afghanistan and taking on the economy, which I think is deteriorating. We need an economic blueprint. We need to borrow some of what worked from the 90s as well as what we need to be doing now in the 21st century to start creating jobs and tackle the outrageous, you know, cost of gas. It hit $107 a barrel for oil yesterday, and people believe we're on the way to $4 a gallon gas, which is outrageous.
It is outrageous. We only have about 30 seconds left. Is it feeling a little like a New Hampshire or an Iowa being in Pennsylvania with 6 weeks to go, a luxury of time on your side?
Oh, it is. You know, and I'm excited about it. I've spent a lot of time in my life in northeastern Pennsylvania, and I've traveled throughout the state. I've had lots of good times in Philadelphia, so I'm looking forward to spending these weeks in Pennsylvania, and I think I'm going to do well because I believe that what I'm offering is what people in Pennsylvania are interested in.
I may be able to squeeze in one more question. I know Governor Spitzer is under fire. Is this going to affect your campaign in New York? He is a supporter of yours.
No, it's a very unfortunate situation, and I wish his family well, and, you know, I don't have any further comment on it.
Well, thank you, Senator Clinton. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good to talk to you. Bye-bye.
I'm Jennifer Lynn, WHYY News.
Well, it's obviously a moral and spiritual, and we've learned an economic disgrace. It simply means that some of our neighbors don't have a place to live, and they find themselves outside on the street or under bridges or living in shelters. And the social disgrace of that needs to be remedied. And so we are concentrating our resources to remedy those people living in essentially uninhabitable situations. I was recently in New Orleans, for example, and there was an encampment of homeless people literally living under Interstate 10. There was a road on one side, a road on the other side, and Interstate 10 going overhead. They were living in sleeping bags and in tents. That's homelessness, and our intent is to remedy it.
In terms of homelessness policy, so to speak, is there anything new that cities and regions are trying or being encouraged to try?
I think the most important thing that's going on in our country is that there is not only unprecedented new research and data, but also unprecedented innovation. Chief among those innovative ideas, if we're attempting to remedy homelessness, the central antidote is a place to live. And so there are rapid rehousing models, sometimes called Housing First, sometimes called Permanent Supported housing, providing a place to live for the homeless person. It matches what the homeless person wants. When I ask homeless people what they want, they never say they want a pill, a program, or a protocol. They say they want a place to live. And so the rapid rehousing model provides that place to live instead of running through a gauntlet of subjective program qualifications. The notion is to provide people with the stability and security of housing as quickly as possible and then deliver the treatment, the medications, and the other services that they need to not only leave their homelessness, but to get on a path towards self-sufficiency.
So with housing first, it's, you know, housing first, and then dealing with a person's addiction or mental illness or inability to get a job or whatnot, and you're finding success with this. How do we pay for this?
Well, first of all, there is great success with it. In fact, what we've seen is for people that we might see on the streets of our communities, and we pass by them every day, and we think a blanket and a bowl of soup may be the best thing that we'll ever be able to do for that person, those very folk are being targeted in the Housing First effort, really in our national initiative to end chronic homelessness. They're being housed and provided the services that they need, and the retention rate for them is 85%. So we now know how to solve the homelessness of most of the folk who are on our streets or long-term in our shelters or living in encampments. And the good news on the resources necessary to do that is that for 7 consecutive years, resources have increased to record levels in the federal budget. And in fact, the president's budget that he proposed for 2009 has another record level of resources. The president asked for more than $5 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars, targeted to homeless people. The question for us is, what will we do with those resources? Will we simply continue to fund what we funded in the past that didn't deliver results, didn't reduce the numbers, or will we begin to invest in the result of ending people's homelessness?
Now, in meeting with Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter, in what way are you trying to get him to address issues of homelessness in our city?
Really, this meeting with Mayor Nutter today, it really came out of our brief meeting at the U.S. Conference of Mayors. It was the first time that our schedules could hit for meeting. So I'm certainly looking forward to meeting with him, hearing what that staff is doing. We know that there was a bit of an uptick in homelessness here in Philadelphia. We're going to talk about that and talk about some of the efforts that are being made in other cities like New York and Chicago and Dallas and Seattle and Portland that are actually seeing a trend of homelessness being reduced on the streets and reduced in the shelters. So it's really a conversation about what works and what doesn't work. Let's leave behind what doesn't work and let's begin investing in what does.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jennifer, for having me.